space. Every second of every minute of every day for over 900 years. Yes. I fought for peace in a universe at war. Now the time has come to face the choices I've made in the name of the Doctor. Our future depends on one single moment of one impossible day. The day I've been running from all my life. The day of the Doctor.
Welcome to Time for 13, a Doctor Who podcast. We are here today to discuss the Of the Doctor series. Joining me today, as always, is my good friend Rob.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for coming along.
Excellent.
So that was from a promo that the BBC created specifically for the 50th anniversary. It's if you search for it, it's Doctor Who 50th, but they also were using the hashtag Save the Day, so that's in there too. It is really worth checking out because it is loaded with Doctor Who Easter eggs and homages and things, because it's as he's talking, it's going through like kind of doing this almost like the paintings, like the 3D painting that of all the doctors in various peril and things are going, like, you know, they show the fourth doctor like falling down as the scarf is flying up and the jelly babies are floating around him as it moves from doctor to doctor all the way until the very end in these sort of still life half moving portraits. And then they get to the 11th doctor, and then he moves and grabs the sonic screwdriver, and then, you know, the whole thing sort of explodes at the end. But it's really, really cool.
If you're a creative person of any kind, you literally just gush with excitement as to how they did that.
Yeah.
it's incredibly so well done. Like, it starts off with like a little bit of like the original episode from 63. Mm-hmm. And then you literally see William Hartnell and he's in three dimensions. Uh-huh. And it pans over him. It took advantage of every high definition pixel you could possibly muster.
And much as like they're sort of restricted by the fact that the 1960s technology, you know, they all look so good, even though like you know that they were shot with all sorts of various things. Yeah, yeah, it's really, really cool.
If you have not seen it, go Google it.
Yeah.
Yes, watch it, because it is just absolutely gorgeous. And everything's in there. Yes. Like, oh, everything. Literally everything.
Yeah, anything you can think of. And like, I think you see every sonic screwdriver. It's really, really cool.
The Piccolo.
Yeah, that's right.
Every villain, every possible thing. TARDIS. I mean, just everything. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the Of the Doctor series. This is going to take us all the way up through the regeneration. So saying goodbye to Matt Smith. But we figured there's so much stuff in here with the 50th and everything that we wanted to have it all in one big chunk. And even just putting together all my notes for this, boy, there's a lot of stuff. There's just, it's so densely packed. I mean, this was like, Who's Stravaganza. Like, this is, I don't think it gets bigger than this. I mean, obviously 50th anniversary, they want to go big, and they went pretty, pretty big. But it's also great to see that, because knowing Moffat was going to be running it, you know, before, during, and after, that he set stuff up all the way through and is just like everything. He didn't hold back on any of the episodes. Like, every single episode that he did in this series was bang, 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 bang. I mean, just really packed full of really cool stuff.
It's amazing. We've talked about it. Like, you know, we did this kind of because of scheduling the mm-hmm. Of the Doctor series. But considering that we are taking the last episode of what is season 7, part 2.
Yep.
We're taking a couple things in between. We're taking this 50th anniversary special episode and then the Christmas special. It is amazing. We said the same thing off air. Like, mm-hmm. It's incredible. The narrative, like, there was so much to talk about that it is spread across all these episodes. This is a wonderful set of episodes to watch in succession.
It really is. I kind of really enjoyed having it this way, where I sort of watched that one and then took a break. And then this one, just watched those one after that. And you see how much stuff he was thinking about and talking about, even though he wrote these over the course of months or whatever. It wasn't like he just sat down and banged it all out. But you can see the same threads running all the way through. It's really quite an impressive feat that he pulled off, and especially with a lot of restrictions that certainly came his way. So that we'll get into all that. But so let's start off where we are at the beginning. So at the end of season 7, the name of the Doctor, a.k.a.
A Wrinkle in the Age of Ultron.
Okay.
So you're
I'm getting the Wrinkle in Time thing.
The Wrinkle in Time thing. The Age of Ultron part is... Well, so the way that the Whisperman or whatever just can become the guy when I was watching.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
It's Ultron. Like, I was like, oh, I've seen this before.
there's a little prequel. There's there's the He Said, She Said, which we played in the last episode. And then there also is Clarence and the Whispermen, which is the immediate prequel to this. And that's – it's pretty small. It's just basically like when the Whispermen appear to – Clarence and like sort of give him the information that later on we'll see him sort of recite the time space coordinates for Trenzalore. It's a minor thing, but actually I say they're scarier in that than they are in the rest of the episodes. And the Whisperman is, again, just like with the snowmen, the Green Intelligent surrounds himself with these scary looking bad guys who really aren't that scary at all.
Well, they have that look of if you've ever seen a movie called Dark City.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's these figures, kind of like, if you're a Buffy fan, the gentleman, right?
A little bit like the gentleman.
You just have these characters that you're like, wow, when you see them, you're like, okay, I don't want to hang around here. Like, mm-hmm. I'm out, right?
Yeah.
So it's got that, but yeah, they turn out where it's not as.
Yeah, they're really, not as great. Yeah. And it was, I remember even in the hype coming up to this, like that Stephen Moffat was saying like, oh, wait, the Whispermen, like they're going to be one of the big baddies of all time. Like you're going to the Whispermen. It was like, they show the Whispermen and go, really? Those guys? Like,
there's guys. Okay. There's guys in top coats and top hats with white pantyhose around their faces, yeah. And a dementor mouth.
They're just one shade off from the silence.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but get into the actual episode. It's really, really bold storytelling. Like, I like the fact that we've gotten to the point where you can have the story where if you try and write down what happens in this episode, it makes no sense at all. But when you're in it and going through, you're completely on board the ride and you're with it all the way through the end. So it starts out with obviously a mystery right from the start, which is Clara falling through time and meeting all the other doctors. I have a little bit of the audio from that too, just because it's a really cool narration she's doing.
I blew into this world on a leaf. I'm still blowing. I don't think I'll ever land. I'm Clara Oswald. I'm the impossible girl. I was born to save the doctor.
So immediately you're like, what? Like, how is she? Is this real? Is this an imagine? Like, how is this going? Like, happening? So immediately you have this mystery of what is going on. Why is Clara falling through time? Why is she meeting other doctors? Is this real? Is it not? And you're instantly drawn in. And also the fact that, are we actually going to find out what the name of the doctor is? Like, it's a great grab right at the start.
Well, and when it first starts with that, you don't expect this to, again, I remember watching this the first time and thinking, oh, this will be a cool episode. And immediately you go, hey, the 50th anniversary celebration started early.
That's right. Yeah. Cause you're seeing all the doctors.
Like you just go, whoa, those are all the doctors. What is going on? This is awesome. And like, again, it's just fantastic how much they squeeze into this. So yeah, that whole opening scene, it's just awesome to see it all. It's done really well. And you're hooked. Right. You're like, all right, what are we doing?
Because at the time, you have no idea what the context is going to be. Then we start seeing the characters putting together. We see we see Jenny. We see Strax. We see Madame Vastra. Like, they're all sort of getting together to – apparently there's a message that they need to get to the doctor. And then we see this – interstellar conference call, which is really cool.
great idea
that they could have not bonded by the laws of time, space, or even you don't even have to be a living person to join into it, because River comes in, and this is like chronologically the latest River we've ever seen, because this is River past the library. So when she is living in the computer, and this is when you see River and Clara meet for the very first time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a great little moment.
Yeah, and Strax not knowing the difference between her, her head and her hair.
Strax has the best. I know some people maybe don't like it. I think his humor is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I say, and when in that scene, I kind of thought they killed Jenny.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, I completely saw
it. I was like, oh, all right. In fact, I guess that's how that, oh.
I had that feeling watching it again, thinking, wow, because it was so well done with the terror and the tension. And you're like, okay, wow, this is serious now. Right. So yeah, that was really, really perfectly portrayed.
Yeah, and we have and obviously then we're getting to go to Trenzalore, and the TARDIS does not want to go. It gets really weird. Like when they get, especially when they get there, the size leak, the doctors, the grave site, like the major time war that had happened, and obviously River is only communicating with. She's not communicating with the doctor at all. She's only communicating with Clara,
as far as we know.
Yes, but yeah, it's so strange and yet so compelling. Because it's all the people you like all together, and then obviously the Great Intelligence then is doing all of this manipulation, all this wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff that he has planned.
And as weird as it gets, you kind of realize, like, okay, again, I mean, I give Moffat credit for this. This is a plot point that you wouldn't even think you would ever really address, right? The doctor is buried somewhere, yeah, right?
Obviously, he has to have a gravesite somewhere. He has to, because his story has to end at some point.
So, no, I mean, to explore that and the way it's actually shown, I think, is actually a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, the idea that the TARDIS dies, that it can't contain the space and time anymore and becomes a big. I also like the little touch of when they crash the TARDIS, the window breaks. And if you look up in the gravestone of the TARDIS, you can see the broken window. Like, that was a nice little touch.
And I love that his time stream is the replacement for the time rotor in the console.
I actually thought
that was really kind of neat. Like, his essence replaces the heart, this element of the doctor's, best companion, best wife, whatever you want to call her. I thought that was really brilliant. I mean, from a set design creative direction, that's a very, very cool, airtight way to present the doctor's tomb.
Right. Do you think that's actually what the doctor's essence looks like when he dies? Or do you think that's the ripple that is caused by him being dead?
Oh,
that's, because I mean, like, they talk about it being like a rip in time and everything. So is it like that's his soul laid bare, or is it, like in Einsteinian physics, like he has caused a distortion in the space-time continuum, and this is the weak spot that it creates.
No, it's his nexus. It's the crack that he is made by his existence.
Okay, so like another crack for the 11th Doctor.
Exactly right. Oh yeah, exactly right. Yeah, he is the crack, own crack. Yeah. No, because look, the show obviously does a very interesting job with dealing with the concept of soul and the concept of how that exists. Mm-hmm. So it's probably more along the lines of, even though you could interpret it that way, I think it's meant to say, hey, these are the cracks that the doctor created by his meddling and helping and fighting all through his thousands of years.
Yeah, that's right. Cause he's pretty old at this point.
Exactly.
So we have a great moment then with River. Actually, before I get to that, we have Clara actually do one of the most amazing things we've ever seen companion do, where she realizes what's going on and basically gives up her life to try and save the doctor, to save every doctor, to throw herself across the time stream and do that. I mean, like, with no thought that he was ever going to rescue her or anything else. I mean, it was, what an amazingly selfless act to have your body ripped, your soul ripped apart and spread across time, hoping, not even knowing, but hoping you would be able to do something and save the doctor.
Well, isn't that interesting when you take this episode at its most root plot level existence? The Great Intelligence basically says, yeah, I'm going to go insert myself in the doctor's crack. I should rephrase that a little. I'm going to insert myself in the doctor's time stream. Yeah. And I'm just going to kill him at every point so that he never exists.
Yeah, I'm going to make every success into a failure.
And Clara is there and says, oh, I will go in there and I will stop you at every point that happens.
Yeah.
That's literally the plot of the entire episode.
Yeah, and it's all the reverse justification thing too. Like, why does Clara show up in all the timelines? Well, because
she explains it all.
Yeah, it's like she showed up, so the doctor started investigating her, which brought her in, which made her go back and become those things that he would investigate that would bring. It's like this, it's its own causal loop.
I think this is actually one of the most complete story arcs that Moffat does.
True. Because it is being middle end. I mean, like, it really wraps itself right up. But before it gets to the end of that, it has one of my favorite, and again, chronologically, the last River Song moment. It has one of my favorite moments between the doctor and his wife.
Oh, yes. I don't come back, and I might not.
Doctor.
Go to the TARDIS. The fast return protocol should be on. She'll take you home, then shut herself down.
There has to be another way. Use the TARDIS. Use something. Save her, yes, but for God's sake, be sensible! How are you even doing that? I'm not really here.
You're always here to me. And I always listen. And I can always see you.
Then why didn't you speak to me?
Because I thought it would hurt too much.
I believe I could have coped.
No. I thought it would hurt me. And I was right.
So obviously we'll see River Song again, but that is really their last moment together, like chronologically in her timeline.
One of my favorite moments of all time.
Yeah, it's great. The two of them are so great together.
It is just, and again, we've said this before, because Alex Kingston is an amazing person.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I happened to be watching part of this episode when my wife came in and she was watching that stuff and she was saying like, wow, they're really good together. And she's like, yeah, but she was really good with David Tennant too. And I'm like, yeah. And she's amazing with Capaldi. Like, it turns out it's just Alex Kingston.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah.
No, that, we'll get there. Yeah. No, it is. I mean, that is such a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And again, because you know, the plot of this episode is literally like three dots.
Yeah.
And they connect pretty much in a straight line. Yeah. This episode is all about these. It's an appetizer for what is to come. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much great stuff in there.
I know there's people have complained about how does the great intelligence, how does that all work out and whatever. That's not the point of this episode.
It amazes me for all the Big Finish audio, for all the novelizations, for all the video games they've done, that they've never told this story. Like, it feels like this is the perfect recipe for an anthology book. 12 stories of Clara meeting the doctor timelines and fighting the great intelligence and working with the doctor. And then sometimes it's behind the scenes and sometimes she's hand in hand. Like we even see in that little medley. So like at the start when she directly speaks to the first doctor, but then sometimes, you know, the fifth doctor is caught in the matrix. I mean, well, it's the matrix in the episode, but not the matrix.
Right.
And so like he doesn't see her and like, you know, each of those could be their own little short story. It seems like that's money on the table. BBC books. Come on.
That's we just when Jenna needs cash.
Yeah.
I mean, no, and that's no offense. No offense to her. Right. She's great.
She's very much in demand at the moment.
Yeah. When she needs cash, yeah. You always got that.
Yeah. Get Neil Gaiman to write one of them. He wrote a short story. Exactly. For the 50s.
But you know, but also even not just even the they have the reference to the Veil Yard.
So here's one of the interesting little tidbits that Moffat has added to canon that I thought was interesting. You get to see the doctor stealing the TARDIS for the very first time, and Susan is with him.
Oh, yeah.
I never thought of that before. Like, he talks about her being on Gallifrey and stuff, too, but I never saw her, like, with him stealing the TARDIS, because he talks about, even in The Doctor's Wife, he talks about stealing the TARDIS, or she stole him and that stuff. I had always thought that he was by himself. I thought he had just, like, met up with Susan at another time. I never thought of the two of them, like, you know, arm in arm, jumping into the TARDIS and stealing it.
No, you probably can assume that because she's Gallifreyan or at least half or something.
Yeah. Another thing that we never fully explained.
Well, and is that the first time we've ever seen what the TARDIS looks like in its natural state?
Yes. That's not the first time we've seen a TARDIS in its natural state, but it's the first time we've seen this TARDIS that way because they have shown those ones before. And we've seen them transitioning between because the Master's time machine – I guess he has TARDIS too. So the Master's TARDIS, his chameleon circuit worked. So we got to see it transitioning as it landed. Like it was the cylinder and then suddenly, I can't remember the episode. So sorry, Whovians. But there's a one point that it turns into a marble column. So it comes in as the cylinder and then it morphs itself into, you know, well, in the 1970s technology, you know, it transitions to a column. So it blends right in. But yeah, but this is the first time we've ever seen like the setting one, the raw naked TARDIS.
Well, just the whole way that's done. I mean, just, it's amazing. Again, I cannot believe how much went in to all of these stories to come together.
Yeah. But then obviously the big moment of this whole thing, like we never get to hear the name of the doctor, but Instead, we get something we never expected, which is a new incarnation of the Doctor, one we had never seen before. They go into his mind, and that has got to be one of the, like, okay, so this whole thing from here on out, I give major, major respect to everyone involved in the episodes that they kept so many secrets, because there are so many things that we had no idea were coming that were just blam, blam, blam. I keep using that expression, but it is amazing to me that they kept these secrets and they land so hard because of that.
Well, because there was no indication that there was going to be all these references to the previous Doctors.
Nope. At this point, we probably knew that Tennant was going to be in it.
But okay, but in this episode, you had no expectation.
No.
You actually had people at that scene at the end where she's in his mind, the dark recesses of the mind, of the existence. Those were actual people dressed up as the other Doctors. Yeah. They filmed that scene. They all kept their mouths shut.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Okay, that's amazing. But that final reveal.
And you hear the graveling tones, and I was like, oh my God, is that? And it turns around, and it's John Hurt. And you're like, oh wow, John Hurt as the Doctor. What?
When, okay, and to this day, the thing that blows me away from as a designer, the font is different. The way it comes onto the screen is something you've never seen like this in an episode.
Yeah.
You literally just sat there. I mean, talk about this was an amazing strategy to assault all of your sensibilities.
Yes.
With this show.
Yes. And I love John Hurt and the fact that they put him in there. You had no idea it was coming. Suddenly there he is. And not only that, but he is the Doctor. What does that mean? And what then credits. Yeah. What? Unanswered in the future, in the 50th anniversary. It's like, what a better tease could there be than, oh yeah, by the way, another Doctor you didn't know about.
And when this came out, you know that there were, I mean, first of all, then that just made November 23rd, 2013 seem like an eternity.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, how are we going to get through this? And then there were people, I think, I mean, it was amazing they kept it as a secret, but then there was like a lot of people then in the weeks after putting it together.
Yes.
Like kind of figuring out, oh.
Okay, so there's something in there because we started to get the inclination that we're going to find out a lot more about the Time War.
And between the Eighth Doctor and what happens in the reboot in 2005.
Yeah.
Like, I think people started to realize that, but you didn't know what was still yet to come.
No.
That's the amazing part.
Yeah.
There's more.
Yeah.
So, this is episode, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's awesome. I mean,
it's
like.
A great, great season ender.
And again, just the plot is absolutely simple and compact. Because this is an episode that is just, this episode is 90% moments.
Yeah.
And you don't care if it made sense.
It really felt like, I mean, the Doctor was going towards it like this is the end.
Right.
He was had that sort of fatalistic thing of like, well, I'm about to break some major rules here. There's going to be consequences for these actions.
This is great. It's a great, that river scene just, I could just watch that over and over again.
Oh, God, awesome. Yeah, it's so good. All right, so, but then we move on to the next biggest surprise. Oh. One of the greatest moments in New Who.
Yes,
the fact that they pulled this off was,
absolutely.
It was such a love letter to all fans. So it's called The Night of the Doctor, a.k.a.
So I Almost Married a Dalek Murderer. Yeah, okay, I'm glad your reaction is that, right?
I love So I Married an Axe Murderer. That's one of my favorite.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it really has that moment where he's like, you're going to love it. Come on with me. And she's like, yeah, I will. Wait a minute.
Oh, you're that guy? No.
You're one of those.
One of the greatest secrets they ever kept. I'm at a loss for words. This is so amazing that they pulled this off. So they're like, oh, you know, a couple of days, but like maybe a week or two. I think it's, it came on. Yeah. But like about a week before the actual 50th anniversary hit, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, there's a prequel. You guys might want to check it out online. And you go online and start it up and its ship is crashing. And there's like you need a doctor. And they turn around and it goes like, I'm the doctor, but probably not the one you're looking for. And it's freaking Paul McGann. Okay. So for those of you who don't know Doctor Who history, here's why this is amazing.
Here we go.
And feel free to jump in at any moment.
No, go ahead.
You know this as well as I do. So when Doctor Who went dormant, basically like in the late 89, I think was the last episode they aired. And it basically like, it didn't get canceled, but for an effect, it just, they didn't have any plans for it. It just sat, it went dormant. So Fox jumps in and says, hey, this Doctor Who thing, we're all about remakes, so let's make an American Doctor Who. So we'll take a BBC Fox co-production, we'll do it. And they actually decided to make it in continuity. So Sylvester McCoy shows up like almost 10 years later from his last appearance.
Yeah, this is in 96.
Yeah, 96, right? So 89, 96, so yeah, 7 years. And does the regeneration into Paul McGann. And he does this two-hour Fox movie, which is really strange. Like, they added some very interesting ideas. It was very 90s Fox. It was very like hot off the X-Files kind of Fox.
Did you watch it live?
I did. I'm trying to remember if I think I did. Yeah, I did.
I watched it live, and I will say this, because I didn't watch very much of Sylvester McCoy, because that was in the days of still PBS syndication.
It was hard to see it.
Yeah. But I remember thinking, this is actually pretty cool. I hate to say it, right? Like, the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, like, the sets look good and the TARDIS looks great. And I met Sylvester McCoy when I was still in high school when he was the Doctor. And I was like, well, this is kind of cool. And then it just didn't go anywhere.
So they did this 2-hour movie and they went, huh? And the American public went, nah. And once again, it goes dormant again. So like in 96, then it's like another 10 years before Russell T. Davies and Christopher Eccleston sort of resurrect it and bring it back. But it's always been this sort of like sad little piece of it, because Paul McGann only ever got to play Doctor Who for 2 hours.
Great actor.
And he did a great job as the Doctor. I mean, like, even for that short time, it wasn't like, oh, that guy. I mean, people really went, oh, you were the Doctor. Like, he was embraced immediately by the fans, and who kind of felt like, yeah, this guy kind of got a raw deal.
Well, in the midst of all this, and then he goes off to record the extra adventures.
Yes, that's the great thing. Like, being the classy guy that he is, he's like, well, then I'll do it wherever you want. Like, I'll do audio adventures. There's been a ton of novels. And then basically his major thing is the Big Finish audio. So he essentially, if you put all those stories together, he did pretty much like a regular run of Doctor Who. Like, if you put all his episodes together, it makes about 3 seasons worth of content. So he kind of did a full run as the Doctor if you include all those things. And that's another reason why this is so amazing. So they bring him in, officially put him into canon, because it was always one of those, well, is it Fox? Like, that's kind of, does that really count? Does he in there? Even though they've used his face in various things before, to actually bring him in to do something new.
And the reason why it was always questionable canon is because there were some timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly things in that TV movie.
He claims he's half-human at one point. I mean, there's a lot of like...
that they've never wanted to address. So putting this all together, and here's the best part. If you see it, and you can obviously see this online if you haven't seen it.
It's online. Yep, available on YouTube. And
his look in that show was this Victorian...
Yes,
long-haired, curled. I mean, by today's standards, it's very, very time-ridden, and it's a little dorky.
Yeah.
He looks awesome in Night of the Doctor.
Yes, when he shows up, and he's even said this is his favorite, like the favorite outfit he's ever worn. Like he shows up just looking like this badass, space archaeologist,
swashbuckling, half pirate,
yeah.
Dude,
great. So one of the cool things about this thing is not only putting him officially in and saying like, here you get 50 minutes, you're going to do something awesome, just as a part of this major 50th anniversary special, like embracing him like no other. But when he starts listing off the companions that he's had, the people have died, those are all from the Big Finish audio. What a classy thing for them to do, to like reach out to like, hey, there's audio adventures that are sort of like little side nonsense things. Nope, that's canon. What a classy thing to do. Like to say those little things that they did, these little side projects that had ordinary, like this. If you look at the relationship between, let's say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
you don't see
that kind of cross love.
Right.
Here, exactly right. You do. They reach out to the expanded canon and say, yep, it's all who, it's all love.
The analogy there would be even like the Netflix shows.
Yes.
That connect to nothing pretty much.
Right.
and here's the thing. I know this was a pipe dream, but when this came out, I remember loving this so much.
Yes.
I even said to myself, and obviously they were not going to do this.
Yes.
Because the production schedule of the main show was so uneven.
Yeah.
You know what? In those off seasons, give him a mini season of 6 to 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Tell the stories of the Eighth Doctor with a side crew, with other, you know, I mean, yeah. Honestly, people would have loved it.
Yeah, I think it would have been great. I think it would have been like in the, like the way they do Torchwood, or the way they do Class, yes. And the way they did Sarah Jane Adventures. Give him 6 episodes. I mean, even just make it Children of Earth, like make it a miniseries of him doing kind of stuff. He looks great.
Oh.
And people love him. Why not?
Yeah, you know,
it's like we are, for the amount of bending of reality and time that we've gone through, like we can accept that. We can, we don't, and we're not waiting for a cameo or anything. Like, just let it be that.
No, it's, I think that was a lost opportunity, but I'll tell you this episode is so great. And then yeah. We also have another blast from the past.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sisterhood of Karn.
Which is awesome. Little brain. That's a Tom Baker episode, Brain of Morbius.
Yeah. Because they even talked at the time, they were known for being able to manipulate regeneration. So like this is another reaching back into Doctor Who lore, yep. And bringing it up as part of like the long history of Doctor Who. And like they can bring old stuff and make it new again.
Well, did you think too? I mean, like here, you know, again, this is the beauty of these series of episodes. One, you're immediately then getting the reveal that, oh, that's who John Hurt is. John Hurt, yep. is the doctor in between, or, you know, supposedly in between. Yeah. You don't know yet.
Right.
But the best part is, here's something that everyone's always wanted to see. Paul McGann regenerating into the next doctor.
That's right.
You get to fill
he never
in
got
that
to
gap.
Do that.
Oh, yeah. It's just awesome.
It's the way that like Moffat talked about wanting to have the complete set of doctors by the time he started. And one of the other nice things they do is when he regenerates into young John Hurt. Yeah. Like John Hurt from like, I don't know, like Caligula. I mean, like the like
Elephant
the
Man. Young, that's like Elephant Man John.
Yeah, exactly. Elephant Man John Hurt. I mean, like, and so you get the idea, like, oh man, he's lived a life.
Yeah.
Since to the next time we see him, it's been, you know, who knows what 70 years, right. of Earth time, and how much is that Doctor time? As we've seen, you know, the Doctor ages in different ways, but like he's been through some stuff. I thought that was a really cool way to show that.
No, that's you go back. I mean, to experience it that first time, you're just like, this is craziness. What is going on?
I was at work. I remember doing this, and it was sort of like that thing came out. I was like, oh, that's weird. I like had a break at the time, and I watched it, and I was like, oh my God.
How did they? I mean, seriously though, and that's even more. You know, the other stuff in the previous episode, The Name of the Doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a bunch of some, you know, one shots and a bunch of effects people in a room. This involved a crew,
yes,
multiple people to film it, and again, they all kept their mouths shut.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
It seems like it was. According to the notes, it was recorded on towards the end of filming, so it was part of the 50th anniversary filming. So it was always in the plan. They just shot it sort of towards the end, but then ended up releasing it first as they were working on the rest of the episode. Oh God, it's such a classy thing to do. It was such a what a burst of adrenaline before you get to the actual 50th anniversary. So then there's a little. Then they have a little another little prologue called The Last Day, and they call it a mini episode, but it's like 5 minutes long. I really don't understand what the point of having it in there at all was. It doesn't really tell you a whole lot of stuff after the Night of the Doctor. What is the point of having this other little piece?
I think the only thing, oh well, first of all, the also known as so it's the last day.
Okay, so Last Day, aka
Starship Time Troopers. Right, okay. Or Halo. I could have gone either way. If you ever played the original Halo game for the Xbox, the beginning of that game is this episode.
Yeah,
that's literally what it is. No, I mean, I think what they wanted to show is a little bit of that hubris on behalf of the Time Lords.
True. And that officially shows us that like we're going to be, it's Gallifrey, Time Lord, Daleks. I mean, like all that stuff is coming. But
oh, no, that we thought we were invincible. Oh, and we're all going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I think that's the point of it.
Yeah,
that's it.
We're in a bleak time. So it's not in the right. Start of the war. It's when things are going awful. But then from that, we go right into the big 50th anniversary special, The Day of the Doctor, a.k.a.
A Doctor for All Seasons.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
That one I was very happy with.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So, yeah, again, this is one of those daunting tasks. Like, as a writer, the idea that you'd be able to do these is, first of all, exciting, and then second of all, terrifying, because, you know, even every casual fan of Doctor Who is going to be watching this thing. You're going to bring back everyone who's never watched any Doctor Who to see this kind of thing, and that's a lot of pressure.
It may have been a national holiday, actually, in the UK.
One of the fascinating things to me about this is, because it was done as a separate event, so it was done as sort of a movie, when they originally said, this is what we're going to do, that the actors were not under contract to do it. So at the time that they went, all right, you need to start writing Day of the Doctor, and he's like, okay, well, who is signed on? Jenna.
Oh, jeez.
He had no one. So he said when he started writing the story, it was the No Doctors, because Matt Smith hadn't signed on, David Tennant hadn't signed on, John Hurt hadn't signed on, and Christopher Eccleston hadn't signed on. I mean, he had no one. So he was like,
Peter Davison had signed on.
He's like, how am I going to do a 50th anniversary special without a doctor?
Oh, they would have found one.
So he had to start writing the whole thing and putting it together without any doctors.
Well, and then obviously.
Yeah, the big thing was, will Christopher Eccleston come back? So from what I understand, and in his talking and in Moffat's talking, Stephen Moffat came to him and said, this is what we want to do. Like, this is our plan. This is the 50th anniversary. It's, you know, it's the multiple eras and thing. And we're going to cross over in the Time War and Gallifrey Falls and all this kind of stuff. And he went to him and said that we would love you to be the guy. Like, before, this is obviously before the reveal of John Hurt. So that would have been Christopher Eccleston. He would have been the guy instead of inventing the War Doctor. And he went to him and said, this is what we want to do. And Chris Jackson, to his credit, took time. Like, he actually went away, like, all right, let me think about this. And so he took some time, thought about it, evaluated it, and came back to him and said, no, sorry, I'm done with Doctor Who. I'm not going to do it anymore. And they said, both of them, in a very gentlemanly way. He didn't say, screw you guys, because he also allowed them to use any footage of him that they had, that he was like, go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
You put, you know, used all the clips. You put me in all the kids, whatever you want to do. Like, I'm good for all of it. And good luck and God bless. You know,
it makes you hurt for Christopher Eccleston as to what possibly, how horrible could that year have been?
Yeah.
That you just go, no, especially when in the history of the show, a previous doctor had made this same mistake. And admitted that they made a mistake.
Huh.
Tom Baker would not come back for the 20th anniversary special.
Yeah.
And in years later, if I've correct what I've read, uh-huh. He was like, yeah, I probably should have.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. But I don't know. But so then the fix for that, he's like, okay, what if there was this, you know, what if there was this guy that was in between this other doctor that actually fought in the Time War and committed these horrible things, and they're off that, which doesn't change anything, you know, because he's the one that rejected the name of the doctor and that kind of stuff. So that then sort of the story spun out from there. And then obviously David Tennant signed on and Matt Smith signed on and Rose.
Billy Piper.
Thank you. I'm so into the series 7 now. I've forgotten all the previous.
No. But isn't that one of those like really amazing happy accidents in that? The drama and the amazing experience that this gives you because Chris Eccleston said no.
Yeah.
It's really
thing.
Yeah. It worked out.
There is a version of Moffat has released a piece of that original script where it was Christopher Eccleston. It's in a charity book and I had it in my notes and now I can't seem to find it.
Oh, interesting. It's
very difficult to track down. I wanted to get it to have it, but it's like only in the UK. It's like a charity book that was put out. But I read, somebody had posted an excerpt from it. It's one or two pages, so it's not even like you're getting like the whole script or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, if ever there was a thing where I would want to see every version of the script, it would be this. Like,
oh, yeah.
I would buy a 1,000-page book with all the various changes that had to be put along the way, because you know anything this massive had to have huge changes from the original inception all the way to final finished script.
But how great, though, the interplay of, okay, I mean, like, we can get into, like, just the, you know, I mean, the plot is obviously, look, I will say this, The whole Zygon thing is a subplot that does. I don't even care.
Yeah. It's just like, it's sure. it's a regular episode. It's like a regular episode happening at the same time as like the biggest episode so far.
Again, it's about the moments. I don't really, but sure. It can insert whatever villain with some sort of weird plot. I don't care. The fact that he goes through all this stuff, but you just, you know, in multi-doctor stories, you're always about, if we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. you just want to see the interplay. You want to see, are they one-upping each other? But do they have this like playful banter? What would you do? I love how they decided to go with 10 and 11.
Yes.
As these very, I mean, brotherly, totally on the same page.
Yeah, like, I have a little piece of the audio from when they first meet, when 11 travels back in time and meets 10.
Oh, he's cool. Isn't he cool? I'm the Doctor and I'm all cool. Oops, I'm wearing sand shoes.
What are you doing here? I'm busy.
Oh, busy. I see. Is that what we're calling it, eh? Hey, hello, ladies.
Don't start.
Listen, what you get up to, the privacy of your own regeneration is your business.
One of them is a Zygon.
I'm not judging you.
Lovely.
Your Majesties, probably a good time to run.
But what about the creature?
Elizabeth, whichever one of you is the real one, turn and run in the opposite direction to the other one.
Of course, my love. Stay alive, my love. I am not done with you yet.
Thanks. Lovely.
I understand. Live for me, my darling. We shall be together again.
Well, wouldn't that be nice?
One of those was a Zygon.
Yeah.
Big red rubbery thing covered in suckers.
Yeah.
Venom sacks in the town.
Yeah, I'm getting the point. Thank you.
Nice.
It's just like how then they meet up. Already 11 is taking the role of like the disapproving dad.
Oh yeah.
Like he's like, you're wearing sneakers, you're running around with like he's, because that's the way Matt Smith has always played him, as old. So he's coming across as the old doctor, like talking to this young romantic running around like crazy going, really? The sneakers? Really? Like two girls? Like,
well, and I love the little throwaway comments. Like once the war doctor shows up and he's got this very disciplined, like you guys are the young whippersnappers. You guys are ridiculous. I love the little moments like when 11 then says something like, you know, timey-wimey, and John and the war doctor's like, where do you get this stuff? And Tennant goes, I don't know where he gets that from.
Yeah. The thing that's great about this, as opposed to like, okay, so you and I went and saw the five doctors recently, recently within the last year, and we got to see when they were all together too. And that was very much following the current doctor, and then the other one sort of came in. This is interesting because you get to see the three parallel paths. And then they all come together. So it's not like we're just following 11 and then suddenly 10 shows up and then suddenly the War Doctor shows up. I mean, it's cutting back and forth between all the things, and then they finally intersect and then they're together through the rest of the time, which I think was a great way to go. Because like you say, that's what you want to see, is you want to see them all together. And that the best, like, and I think that best encapsulated when they're all thrown in jail.
Oh, definitely.
So that's where the Willy Wobby thing happens. And then one of my favorite moments happens too, where the War Doctor is trying to, because these are his future, like, how do you feel about what I'm about to do? And that's, I'm going to play that for you.
Did you ever count?
Count what?
How many children there were on Gallifrey that day?
I have absolutely no idea.
How old are you now?
Oh, I don't know. I lose track. 1,200 and something, I think, unless I'm lying. I can't remember if I'm lying about my age. That's how old I am.
400 years older than me, and in all that time, you never even wondered how many there were. You never once counted.
Tell me, what would be the point?
2.47 billion.
You did count.
You forgot. 400 years, is that all it takes? I moved on. Where? Where can you be now that you can forget something like that? Spoilers.
No. For once, I would like to know where I'm going.
No, you really wouldn't.
I don't know who you are. Either of you. I haven't got the faintest idea.
They're you. They're what you become if you destroy Gallifrey. The man who regrets. And the man who forgets.
I love that. The man who regrets and the man who forgets.
Here's the amazing thing about that sequence. Imagine that conversation being had in time of itself. The point of that is, and you know, this is where I know people got upset with Moffat because of his social justice, you know, whatever else. I think it's brilliant. Imagine time having a conversation with itself saying, you don't remember the Civil War? You don't remember the Spanish-American War? You don't remember World War II? What are you doing? Seriously, it's phenomenal. It's an amazing statement on what time does, not just to our memories, but to our callousness, to what we wish to forget, and we end up making the
same
mistakes.
There's so many amazing things in there, but I tell you, that sequence, like, because they're in just in there, there's some hilarious stuff, there's some sciencey wine, and then there's that chunk right there, which is like really, really gets you right in the gut.
I love the rewatching these episodes. You just, you know, I mean, maybe it's just time and you know the plot for a little bit. These words take on a totally different, deeper meaning. And I think that's really brilliant.
Yeah. They have that one of my favorite bits is with the science screwdriver of like working the calculations that it's all three of like, it's started here and it's gone to there and then, oh, but hey, look, it's done. And then they never even thought to check the door.
Just check the door. Like, oh, it's just great stuff. I mean, again, it's, there's nothing to do with the plot. It's just, you're watching these. This is all about interplay. It's just about the relationships and the conversations.
And another question, long answered, is why was Elizabeth so angry? We get to see because he jilted her. He left her. Absolutely. So that's another thing from Russell T. Davies era that finally gets answered. And then we finally get to, let's see, I would say I could play 1,000 of these things, but there's so many great moments. I tried to like condense it down to a couple. What I love is that through the whole thing, the War Doctor is so growl and like, because he's seen horrible, horrible things. Like he's the one who's fought in the Time War. So he's seen all these terrible things and he's so down and dour all the time. And then there comes the moment when his future incarnation, when 11 finally goes, nope, we're not going to do this. We're going to make a change. And like the change in his demeanor is one of my favorite moments in the whole thing. So I want to play a little bit of that audio too.
Gentlemen, I have had 400 years to think about this. I've changed my mind.
Still a billion Daleks up there attacking?
Yeah, there is.
But there's something those billion Daleks don't know.
Because if they did, they'd probably send for reinforcements.
What? What don't they know?
This time there's three of us.
Oh! Oh! Yes, that is good! That is brilliant!
Oh! I'm getting that too! That is brilliant!
I've been thinking about it for centuries!
She didn't just show me any old future. She told me exactly the future I needed to see.
Now you're getting it.
Hey?
Oh, who did? Bad wolf girl, I could kiss you.
Yeah, that's gonna happen.
Sorry, did you just say bad wolf?
Another callback.
Well, actually, though, but isn't that almost a bittersweet callback? In that here they are in the same scene and they can't see each other.
Oh, the curse continues.
I thought that was, I mean, that was pretty sly. I mean, I know it, that was just good. It was,
but yeah. Then the next greatest secret that they had. So by this point, we knew who the next actor was going to be. Like we knew that Capaldi had already been hired and stuff too. But the fact then that not only is all the way through, they found a way to put him in the episode. And I'm going to play just that too, because it's one of the greatest, like, you know, raising the hairs on your arms, like screaming at the TV. Oh my God.
We'd have nothing.
You would have hope. And right now that is exactly what you don't have.
It's delusional. The calculations alone would take hundreds of years.
Oh, hundreds and hundreds, but don't worry. I started a very long time ago.
Calling the War Council of Gallifrey. This is the Doctor.
You might say I've been doing this all my lives.
Good luck.
Stand by.
Ready. Commencing calculation. Zoom me there.
Across the boundaries that divide one universe from another.
Got a lock onto his coordinates.
And for my next trick, I didn't know when I was well off. All 12 of them.
No, sir. Ah! All 13!
And just the shot of the eyebrows. Oh my God.
That was pretty awesome. Well, first of all, you also have in that you have a little homage to the Brigadier.
Yes. Yep. They say the same line.
No, when I was well enough off. Right. And okay. No, the Capaldi cameo, the only thing, you know what though? The only thing, and this is not getting ahead of ourselves here, but I will talk about this in a couple episodes. I wish we would have seen where that took place in his timeline. Because he looks, honestly, it looks like he's like somewhere in between his regeneration and deep breath.
Now so we'll get into it as we do for future episodes. But I always thought at some point they would show where that happened, but they never did. Like we've seen his.
Yeah, they never got
seen,
to
now it. We've seen beginning, middle, and end like of his time, and we never saw where that went through.
But no, that was again. That, I mean, literally, this episode has, and we're not done yet. Yeah, there's a couple more
whams before we move on.
There were just the fact that you could stuff this much stuff into an episode.
Yeah. Awesome. Speaking of continuity, so when the Doctor says his age, people have figured out that this takes place for Tennant basically during what we expected, during the walkabout time. So this is somewhere in the middle of like around all this thing with flying buses and bug creatures and that kind of stuff. So somewhere in there is when this happens, and of course he doesn't remember, but that's essentially where it happens. So it happens before, like well before end of time and having to and the Master returning and all that stuff. So it wasn't like,
because he has no companion.
Well, he has no companion. Yeah, right. So this is during his wandering around phase.
Got it.
But then, of course, they save it. They put it in a pocket universe. You know, Trenzalore is still coming, but that's a future problem. That's a future Doctor to worry about that stuff too.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so this is what I'm interested in. So we get the moment where all three of them are there. They're all heading out in their TARDISes. They're going out of the way, and then the Curator shows up.
Well, first of all, wait. Before the Curator shows up, they're in their TARDISes. They're all saying their goodbyes. Right. The War Doctor has a very, very funny moment where he goes, "Oh, which one's mine?" And of course, his is the one that looks like trash, which I totally think is awesome, right? Like his literally, and I love that they even address so, and they'll do this again. They address so accurately the difference actually in the shape of the police box, which is wonderful. Yeah. But we have this where he's all done. Mm-hmm. He goes into his TARDIS console room, which is this great hybrid of old and Tennant level TARDISes, and he starts to regenerate.
Right. So you see it and just starting, and then they cut away from it. And the reason they cut away is because basically Stephen Moffat has said, Chris Eccleston said he did not want to be a part of the 50th anniversary. And the longer I would let that regeneration go on, the more it would seem like he did something for it. Like, and he was being very clear about he did not want to be a part of it. I did not want to give anyone the impression that he came in and shot even that. So that's why you see some of his features start to appear, and then it cuts away.
Eyes. When you see the hairline in the eyes, then it's just enough. And if you go on YouTube, you can actually search. People have actually recreated it with his full face.
Oh, really? Oh, God bless the fans. I love them.
Well, no, and I have to say, and have done it incredibly well.
Yeah, there's actually a really good Super Hulock thing out there too. Actually, I'm sorry, it's a Sherlock meets Sherlock on the TARDIS. Or
something. It's
11 and Sherlock, where like he's like they do a really good job of making it look like
there's some serious after effects work being done out there by people. No, but anyway, I mean, like, yeah, no, I understand he said that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you could say that when you've used clips of him earlier in the episode.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I think there's more to that story, but whatever. it's enough where you got the fact, you got the final chapter closed.
Yeah.
We've seen all the regenerations.
Right.
That's all. It's cool.
Okay. So then, as Eleven is all on his own, the Curator shows up and it's Tom Baker.
And here's the deal. When that they tease it perfectly. Yes. Oh, you know, the this old guy wanted to come and see you. Tennant takes off, right? Uh-huh. I don't want to go. And, you know, Clara says, all right, I'll leave you with your painting. Yeah. Cause they, you know, they, and we talked about the stasis, the, these whole Gallifreyan paintings are cool.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Which we'll play into a later episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we've got that when he says, oh, I could retire and I could be the curator.
Uh-huh.
The moment that voice speaks, it is absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. Did you know as soon as you heard the voice?
As soon as I heard the voice. Yeah, but I had no idea he was going to make a cameo. I was kind of thinking like, you know, those other guys are around. They're still doing stuff. And we'll get to what they were doing at the time of this.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, as soon as you heard the voice, you're like, no way. Because Sunbaker was the David Tennant of his time. He was ginormous, like as the Doctor. He stayed the longest, like he was beloved.
Well, and he is the last surviving of the earliest Doctors.
Yeah. And he has had an on again, off again relationship with Doctor Who and fandom and stuff too, where for a while there he was like, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to talk about it. That was a thing I did before. And then as he got older, he, you know, sort of turned around and really embraced it and has become, you know, a real big champion of the Doctor Who stuff and is willing to talk about anything. He's a very, very interesting man. Actually, all the Doctors are very, very interesting people. Like they're more than just, I'm an actor, I show up, I do lines. It's like they have all these bizarre interests and stuff too. It takes a very unique kind of actor to be the Doctor.
Yeah, but I think we can safely say Tom Baker is maybe the most eccentric of them.
Yes, I would say that. Though Sylvester McCoy, you know, he's kind of up there too.
Kind of, but I think Tom Baker still gets the award.
He gets this cameo. Okay, so what is your pocket fan theory of who the curator is?
Well, the curator is he is the Doctor.
You think he is the Doctor?
Oh no, he's. Oh no, I don't. Here's the deal. Look, everybody I think can accept this fact. Uh-huh. This show will continue infinitely.
Oh, sure.
There is no end. You'll never have to worry about that. There'll always be another set of regenerations. Mm-hmm. There's never, you know what? It was cool. This is something that I think any showrunner could have said, I can do this because it's Tom Baker. I can do it because it's the 50th. And I can do it because it's never going, there's no BBC that's ever going to say, oh no, we're going to end it. And we're going to end it definitively. And that's it. No, you're not going to do that. And it definitely opens up. I mean, because you've got the Veil Yard, you've got all these other things that, you know, mm-hmm. in canon, the Doctor has a lot of stories yet to be told that are off the grid. I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm perfectly fine with him being a Doctor.
Hmm. Okay. So, I mean, are you thinking that, I mean, obviously this is all just, you know, fan theory, you know, fanfic world at this point, but are you thinking like that Doctor, the Fourth Doctor, had a Trenzalore kind of moment where he lived a long time before he sort of got reset?
This is 4,000 or 5,000 year old Doctor, and he gets to such a point, he does the Qui-Gon Jinn, where like I guess what I learned how to pick myself when I regenerate.
Okay.
And I think he basically goes back to, wow, you know what? That one was really cool. I'm going to go back to him and becomes, and I think you could make the case, not just doesn't take the face and the body, actually, for lack of a better term, reincarnates the essence of that Doctor.
Hmm. Okay.
Oh, am I the only person who thinks that?
I don't know. That's the first time I've heard that theory. So.
Well, no, tell me. So what do you think? What do you think?
I didn't think that he was. I thought it was more like it was for us, for fans. And they're playing around with it. But I never really got the idea that he was really, really was the Doctor. I really thought that he was basically a curator, like the person who knows a lot about he's the historian or whatever, that he just knows all of this lore. But I never really got the impression that he was actually the Doctor himself. I mean, that's they're playing around with that, but I never really thought.
No, actually, I took it totally. Too crazy. If that were the case, he's too insane. No, yeah. He's the Doctor. Because then you don't, because he makes the case about one. He makes the case of like, how did you get this painting? Uh-huh. Why do the walls have these, the roundels uh-huh. on it? Like, no. Well, actually, you could make the case that the gallery is the TARDIS. Because that's where I always got that impression too. That's why now, of course, yes, timey-wimey, how do TARDISes materialize inside of the TARDISes? Don't worry about that. don't worry about that part. I'm just saying, yeah, I totally
am. Show, cool. I should really just relax.
Exactly. I am totally cool with that actually being a future doctor.
Yeah. So in addition to watching it at home, you and I actually went and saw this in the theater. We went and saw the 3D version.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And in that, there actually was a little bit of new footage that I don't have the audio from it because I couldn't find it because it's impossible to track down. Even the 3D Blu-ray, which I have, even though I don't have a 3D player, doesn't have it on it. At the start of it, Strax comes out and does an announcement, basically does the announcement about the rules of the theater, about silencing your cell phone, and all that kind of stuff. And he also has come to believe that popcorn are small living creatures. And so he enjoys eating it so much because he's ingesting all these. It's really funny. And then to do the now turn on your 3D glasses thing, it's actually 10 and 11. Like they come out, David Tennant and Matt Smith come out in character, in costume, and do this little. They have a little back and forth thing talking about 3D, and they're taking us into a new dimension we've never been to before.
Is there another show that has ever written such self-deprecating humor into its actual script than Doctor Who? Because the jokes about Matt Smith's chin are completely funny. And that's something the show's done for. I mean, it's done for almost all time, yeah, right?
I mean, even this one, they talk about John Hurt talks about, oh, I hope my ears are smaller.
Yes, like I love that. I mean, it's just awesome. Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts of that little prep, little. I don't know what you want to call it. It's a preface or a little introduction.
Yeah. And it's great. Cause then the two of them are like sort of bantering back and forth, like, you know, sort of at each other. And then the war doctor shows up, like he's standing there and the two of them get like super serious.
The audience reaction was thrilled. Yeah. Actually, you can see videos of it on YouTube.
Are there?
Where you can hear. Oh yeah, there are. Okay. Where you can hear the audience reaction and the audience. Nerdgasm, right. But I mean, it's fine. It's totally worth listening to because it's very funny.
Yeah, that was great. That was that. We've seen a bunch of the Doctor Who stuff. Lied to. That was the best one of all of them. Because
there was
a behind the scenes thing afterwards. It was a really great.
So one other thing I want to mention about this episode that's one of my favorite parts that is sadly not available anywhere. Mm. There is a different version of the theme at the closing credits.
Oh.
That is wonderfully done, and it is nowhere to be found online.
Really?
They actually came up. The BBC released a 50th anniversary. You can get it on. I know Apple Music has it. Mm. A 50th anniversary, you know, album collection of music. That version of the theme is not on there. They have all the other themes from all the different eras of the show. And for whatever reason, and I'll go back and listen to it. It is one of my favorite arrangements of the entire score of theme they've ever done.
So it's in the closing credits of the 50th.
Yes. And it's unique credits because they do a fade and zoom of every one of the doctor's faces in between the credits.
Huh. Okay. I got to the end and after he does his speech and I just sort of shut it off, I'll have to go back and listen to that again.
So the closing is really cool on this. He has this little thing about dreams and he dreams of going home. So we've obviously set up the next big thing. The one of the big story arcs is finding Gallifrey. Where is it? Is it, are they still alive?
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful they do that final scene, even though the photoshopping was a little wonky.
Yeah, but you know, you only can do so much.
You can only do so much.
As they're pulling, footage from the 60s and trying to make.
But I will tell you though, but when you see that trailer, the trailer that we talked about, I'm surprised they didn't do a better job, but it is cool that they do the whole lineup of all the doctors. And I think it is cool, kind of cool that they give William Hartnell his little place of honor at the top. That's cool.
It's
a phenomenal episode. Oh, yeah,
Day of the Doctor. So it's amazing. They really went all out. I'm very, like you said, the Zygon stuff is okay. I mean, like, you know, it's sure. funny and it's actually very clever, which I like. And the Queen Elizabeth stuff is funny. And like, it's just regular stuff, but it's really when you get the three doctors and obviously Clara's in there too. And Billy Piper's in there too, even though she's playing a different character, but that's where it really shines. So,
absolutely. All right.
So then we move on to the Christmas episode, the final appearance of Matt Smith as the Doctor, kind of, at least in a full episode, The Time of the Doctor, a.k.a.
Castaway on Christmas Island.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
And it's and I mean, only because Handels and Wilson, they play.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, it's coming off of this set of episodes. This had to suck. Like, I mean, like from where we're at, I mean, from everything he'd gone through in the 50s and stuff, like, there's no way this really could have been great just because of all the work had gone into the previous ones. And it really doesn't.
Now, you really, okay, so as a Christmas episode, let's take it as a Christmas episode.
Still not the worst. Still okay. Not the worst Christmas episode.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you on coming. That. I don't know though if we're heading towards the same one, but we'll find out, right? Yeah. So I think we are, but we'll see that later.
Yeah.
No, so okay. Here's the thing. Yeah, I mean, you really can't. I mean,
this is prime standard hamburger Moffat. This is like right in his thing of just like silence and Daleks. I mean, it's like all of this just stuff. Let's just pack it full of all these kind of things. And there's very little room to breathe. It is so chock full of just stuff happening. It's just kind of be like, okay, it's just like something you more endure than enjoy.
Well, though, okay. So here's things like about it. Okay, so obviously the story is that we get a little bit of closure on the silence and the papal mainframe or whatever.
Yep.
But he basically has to defend this town called Christmas for 300 years.
Yes.
Okay, and he becomes an old man, and we'll get to the end. But basically, I mean, that's kind of the story. Here's a couple things I love.
Okay.
I love the joke of Clara and the boyfriend, and Clara's trying to cook the turkey in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
He shows up naked. Like, I do think that's all very funny. Look at there. It's funny. It's
silly.
It's the grandmother. Awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, or the great aunt or whoever that is. There's some funny moments.
Yeah. The fact that Matt Smith had shaved his head for a movie role.
And that they put that into the show.
Yeah, they put it in the show, and he pulls off. I think he actually was he wasn't bald, but he had a really close cut hair, and so they put a bald cap on him really easily. But he really had shaved his head.
So okay, but then we get to the other thing, and the last 10 minutes we're gonna get to that.
That's where it shines. Like I'll talk about that, but it's all the other stuff leading up to it.
So there could have been another alternative title for this episode. Okay. Who the hell is Tasha Lem?
Boy, is if ever there was a time in an episode that you felt the distinctive River Song shaped hole in it, it was this one. Because it's like,
what? Because here's the deal. And I'll even say this. I love her.
Yeah, I
love the character.
Yeah.
It's River Song, right?
It really is River Song. Like, I was like, I thought at some point there would be like, pull off the mask, and it really is, or like, oh, actually, I'm remote controlling, or you know, something like all the way through. And you're like, oh no, she really was just a different person who was written remarkably like and had a lot of history like River Song.
Well, wait, what really has that ever been confirmed?
No, she's a completely unique character. Obviously, she like over the 300 years is when all of season 6 happens, because the schism happens, and the Kovarian, is it the Kovarian sect?
Yeah, the sect, the sect that breaks off.
They're the ones
from
who
them,
take
right?
a bunch of the silence, the priests with them, and like, well, we need this. We have to save Trenzalore. So the only way to do that is to kill the Doctor. The only way to kill the Doctor is to create a time traveling assassin that he's going to fall in love with. Clearly. I mean, and kidnap a baby. I mean, duh. It's so obvious. Why isn't everyone on board with it?
So as much as I do love, but I'll tell you this though. I mean, I know Stephen Moffat's has a view on organized religion, right? And we've talked about that. Mm-hmm. I love though that even the papal mainframe had their Protestant Reformation, obviously, at some point.
That's right. So wow, Madame Kovarian is the Martin Luther of the. The Doctor.
I mean, really? Because that's kind of what they're saying, right? Like, and their crusades and like all this other stuff. Like, I just think it's amazing. Like, I just kind of I am totally, as a person of faith, like, I am perfectly entertained by this. Like, totally entertained. Though the bed altar, that's very funny. Yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
We have a lot of that, right?
Leave it at that. No, and then the confessional, the whole thing, the little like the transporter is a confessional. Yeah. Like, it's just great.
And this plays like a greatest hits medley at the end of a concert.
Like, absolutely.
Because it's like, hey, it's like angels. Here's the silence. Here are the angels. Here's the crack in time. Like Trenzalore. Like it's hitting all the beats to make sure everybody, you got everything covered.
So let me ask you this. Handles.
Oh, I love Handles. Handles. Okay, good. Handles is up there with one of some of the best companions he's ever had. You're right. The Wilson thing is very clear. And, you know, Doctor Who is very much a scavenger when it comes to that stuff. They'd be like, hey, that's a great idea. Now it's ours. Like, they like to pull that stuff in.
And very well done. I love the concept of Handles.
Yeah.
It's a little redeeming for Cybermen.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's kind of cool. True.
When he finally shuts down doing his last job, which is to tell him to patch the phone back in, it's really sad. I really was like, oh, Handles.
No, I thought that too. So as we move on to the ending here.
What we're wondering through this whole episode was, like, past the town called Christmas and the field that makes you tell the truth and Daleks taking over priests and all this stuff. How the hell are they going to get out of this? Because this is his last regeneration. Like, that's what it all comes down to.
Well, and that was a surprise.
That was
right?
A surprise, yeah. Because it was like, this should be the end. So how are they going to get around this? And they did it in a great way, because they again pulled from Doctor Who lore. They're like, okay, well, if you were going to say that Doctor Who lore is canon, that the 13 generations are canon, then also, hey, by the way, the Time Lord Council can grant extra cycles regeneration because they did it for the Master. Exactly. By the way,
that's canon.
That's right. It's canon. So, like, that's what they hit him with another 13 regenerations. Or is it 12? Well, I guess this is the first one. So there'll be 12 more. Well, no.
Right.
We'll be long dead, but no. I was trying to do the math to try and figure out if it's 3 years per doctor.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where would that be?
So how long did Clara stay frozen outside the TARDIS?
Well, for her, I think, but supposedly it took the TARDIS 300-ish years to travel from there to there. So, yeah, I don't know. We're already in the future for what's going on in Trenzalore. So I guess the other question is there a future Trenzalore story still out there?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, obviously he circumvented this one, too, but we've already been to his grave and we've already seen his quote-unquote dead body. So it's coming. So he'll have to, you know, they don't ever need to return to this, you know, writing-wise, but, you know, fan lore, like this is the place where it ends. So eventually things will have to circle back around to Trenzalore.
No, exactly. Yeah, no. It's left open.
I don't need any showrunners to actually do anything with it. Like, you can just let it lie. But I'm saying, that's where it's going to be.
So
we had an old doctor with looking a lot like the first doctor.
I think we've talked about the old age makeup. This is in the upper. It's not the best, but it's definitely in the upper third of what they've done.
Yep.
And he does it really well. I mean, obviously the whole scene.
Yeah.
I think it's really great. And
Matt Smith's been playing him old all the way through, so it really is just a natural thing that he would actually look as old as he's been, you know, playing him all the way through, which is one of the things I love about Matt Smith's performance, is how he's so young and yet he plays the Doctor so old, hanging around with young people. And then we get to the real heart of the matter. We get to the regeneration. Yeah, this is the big one. It's interesting how it's changed over the course. So this is like how, because we've seen various ways before, but now they're getting bigger and more grandiose as they go along, these that they're allowing the people to go. Now with David Tennant, it was very quiet. It was him going around to the extended cast that they had built for that, and also is Russell T. Davies stuff too, sort of touching on his, you know, his greatest hits, saying goodbye, and then it was a very simple "I don't want to go." But for Matt Smith, one of the great speechifiers of all times, they had to give him something else to do. So I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's great, and obviously I don't want us all crying by the end of this episode. But I'm just going to play the middle bit. That's my favorite part of his final speech.
We all change when you think about it. We are all different people all through our lives. And that's okay, that's good, you've got to keep moving so long as you remember all the people that you used to be. I will not forget one line of this. Not one day, I swear. I will always remember when the Doctor was me.
Raggedy Man. good night.
And the fact that they had Karen Gillan shoot one last thing of that. And interestingly enough, both her and Matt Smith,
yes,
both bald.
Wigs.
Because she was shooting Nebula at the time. So they were both wearing a big, ridiculous wigs. But it's so beautiful. And it's such a nice way to sort of touch back to how Matt Smith's reign originally started with Amelia Pond.
The symphony of this entire sequence, the music, the visuals, the script. The greatest part of this, I actually would say, I think this is the greatest moment in the history of the show. Here's why I'll say it. Because one, it's the entire thing, the visual, the music, the script. But the greatest thing you can do in Doctor Who, or in almost in any written creative work, is when what the character is saying applies to the character, it applies to the audience, and it applies to the actor playing the character to the audience. That is absolutely brilliant. Because one, the character can certainly say this. You can see the version of a doctor saying these words. You as the audience are thinking, you know, those words are meaningful to humans. That is literally what life is about. We're always changing. But if you forget who you were, that's a problem. But then it is Matt Smith, the human, saying, this has been awesome. That is phenomenal. Yeah,
they've gotten to the point where with the regenerations, they can really push against that fourth wall. Because David Tennant, I don't want to go. With Matt Smith's, I'll always remember when the doctor was me.
It was me,
And Capaldi has some of those too, which we'll get to in the future.
And as much as I love Peter Capaldi, no, this one is fantastic. And when you've got the perfect notes of the long song playing.
Yep.
Karen Gillan, it's perfect. Yeah. Now here's the only thing that gets weird for me. Uh-huh. So as a person who's watching this visually, once he finishes this, there's this great sound effect when he pulls the bow tie off.
It hits the floor. And
you're sensing the regeneration coming. And then something weird happens with the editing. And I've always thought that. There's just this weird moment between him and Clara. And he lets out the weird.
Hey. And then it's the whip pan. All of a sudden, whoop, and then like, boom, he's the new doctor.
Yeah, I always felt like it's a little bit of a hiccup. Like, I don't know why. Well, it's just a weird editing choice.
They had it when always happened is now is that the new showrunner takes over at the regeneration. Now, obviously, Moffat was staying on, but I still think he chose that moment to change up the visual style.
That's
always how it's been, is that when Tennant regenerated, from the moment he was Matt Smith, that was Stephen Moffat shooting. Like they basically had handed it off. And so I think even though it was a new regime was sort of taking over, they were doing it through. I think they tried to have a definite visual style change there to say like things are different now, like way different.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Like we talked about, this is going to be a big one. The change from Tennant to Matt Smith was not as, now we know, was not as dramatic as the change from Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi. That is much more of a big shift. And obviously then from Capaldi to Jodie Whittaker. That's a big shift there too. Right. But little did we know how big of a shift was going to happen. But so aside from this, which I agree is one of the best Doctor Who moments, and like it still destroys me. So looking back on Matt Smith's time as the Doctor, even though he has one final appearance still to make, what are your favorite Matt Smith moments?
Oh, I think, well, everything with Riversong. Yeah. I just love everything with Riversong. I still think that series 5 is just fantastic. Yeah. It is just awesome. And I love him. I think you said it actually really well, is that here is what is the youngest guy at the time, or still then, to play the role, and yet he plays it old. And I just love, I still think, God, I still go back to Doctor's Wife. Doctor's Wife is so good. And the fact that, here's the deal. I think the fact that he was the doctor during the 50th, it's really an embarrassment of riches on his part, because you got all of this. Like you really were in the right place at the right time. Just some of the best episodes of the show are during his time. Yeah. And that's great. It's awesome. Good for him.
Yeah, he's definitely cemented his place in Doctor Who lore.
I would say, well, and I had one note about this, like this little series of episodes. I don't think you cannot underestimate the mental and creative drain it took to pull this off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like when people like get the role or whatever, it is a marathon. When you are the doctor, you are like they talk about in TV terms. They always talk about number one on the call sheet. You're the first name on the thing and you lead the production because like you have to be there longer than anybody else. You have to work harder than every other actor and you're going to be there long. You're going to be there at the start and you're going to be there at the end because it's your name on the top.
Exactly right.
So I never get mad at them when they're done because it's sort of like, oh, guys, I just want to like take 6 months off and not do anything. I only understand.
Oh, yeah. Even for Moffat, yeah. Like, I don't understand. I don't know how you this was a juggling act that I don't know how you pull this off and then decide to go for another three seasons. Right. I mean, seriously, and maybe this clearly, is why some people are
like I say, and we'll talk more in the other one, but perhaps that more changes should have been made at this point,
right?
But right. I think Matt Smith was perfectly right time for him to step off and hand the Doctor's sonic screwdriver off to the next guy.
Yeah. Now he did. He almost stayed on for another season,
yep,
though.
Yep. There was it was close. So I think he
it was close.
But I think he either went, you know. Tenet did three. I think I can do three. And
great. Oh, this is such a great collection of episodes. Yeah, fantastic. Great tribute. Great fan service. Great tribute to the show.
Yep. The of the Doctor was a great way to end this thing. Like, and what a slam bang wing to go out, you know, from your time of the Doctor thing to get to do something that ginormous and global.
Exactly.
And get to work with John Hurt. Alas, John Hurt.
Awesome.
But I say John Hurt gone way too soon, even though he had a fantastic life and an amazing career.
Amazing career.
Yeah, we will be hearing from him again. I have another fun little piece of audio for further on down the line in a couple episodes. He has not left our little show here because he has one more thing left.
Oh, excellent.
So I'm looking forward to playing that. But that was of the Doctor. We've covered all the big the highs and the lows, and they're not really very many lows.
No, not many. The only other thing you could watch is the Five-ish Doctors reboot.
Yeah, two little side pieces that you could do. So go ahead and talk about the Five-ish Doctors.
Oh, so basically at the time, and they did a pretty brilliant job of this. You know, you still have other living Doctors, previous Doctors. You have Colin Baker, Peter Davison, the fifth Doctor, Colin Baker, the sixth, Sylvester McCoy, the seventh. They did a whole sidebar. Okay, my funny, if you had an alternative title for this, would be The Doctor's Office. Playing on the TV show The Office.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because it's completely breaking the fourth wall. It's very slapstick and ridiculous. It's the story of, and you can see this, it's on Vimeo. Mm-hmm. I think it's on a few places. Yeah. The quality's not great, but you'll find it. It's this fairly long, like, what does it run? About 35 minutes.
So, yeah.
It's the story of the three of them in the real universe saying, hey, how are we not in the 50th anniversary special? Mm-hmm. And their madcap adventures
trying to get to weasel their way into the 50th anniversary special.
Oh my God. And again, if you want to talk about self-deprecating humor, this is just full of it.
Yeah, they crash a convention at one point to enlist the help of somebody else. And there's some other little celebrity cameos in there.
Oh, it's, I mean, and actually, you know what I forgot in this one was Sean Pertwee, who is the third Doctor's son.
Yep, he's currently on John Gotham. Pertwee.
So the show, there's basically a scene in this where he's sitting with another actress and they're like, have you gotten a call for this? And he's like, no, but he's like, I'm working on a special project in America. I can't really talk about. That's the show he's talking about is Gotham, which is really funny. No, I mean, it's just, it's a cameos galore. Mm. And really, I think it's always awesome to see people not take themselves too seriously.
Yeah, and they end up like running through one of my favorite scenes in that is them running through the Doctor Who experience in Cardiff with all the Doctor Who memorabilia. Yes. Yeah, but
it's worth watching because it really is. It's funny.
And then the other side, if you're interested in the 50th anniversary lore, they actually did a TV movie about the creation of Doctor Who called An Adventure in Space and Time. And it's very, very good. I mean, it's done by the same people. So it's written by Mark Gatiss, and it's about like how the show was created, and it actually has a lot of lore to it, because not only is David Bradley playing the first Doctor, but he's playing William Hartnell, who is then playing the first Doctor in it, and eventually he will come back to actually play the first Doctor in a future episode of Doctor Who. But for spoiler alert, if you're actually ever going to watch this, it's very good. But if you're ever going to watch this, I'll give you one spoiler. There is a really nice moment, because it was the 50th. There's a moment where in actual real history, William Hartnell had some health issues, so he couldn't do the role anymore. So he had to hand it off, and he was, you know, had sort of bittersweet, he had melancholy feelings about that. Like it was the best role he'd ever had, and he was beloved around the world, but he physically could not do the job anymore. So he had to step away. So there's a moment where he is alone in the TARDIS set, like saying goodbye, essentially, kind of like taking a second to be like, I don't get to do this anymore. And he looks up, and Matt Smith is there, like as the Doctor.
It is
standing on the other side of it, just like smiling at him, like, I owe everything to you. It's a silent scene.
Beautifully.
The two of them looking at each other. Is it cheesy? Yes. But I'm telling you, in the course of that thing, it works. Exactly. It's perfect.
The moment. Well, it's again, I mean, the great moments are, it's not just Matt Smith looking at him saying, hey, I owe everything to you. Your time is going to your legacy.
That's right.
Goes on.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's incredibly well done. And here's the thing. You should watch it, because you need to understand the story of Verity Lambert.
Oh, yes.
Who is literally the godmother of Doctor Who. And she is the
to have a woman have that much power over a television show in BBC in 1963. I mean, it's really, really great. And the fact that now she finally gets a chance that her name is. And actually, you'll recognize a lot of the actors have too. They pulled a lot of really good British actors to do that stuff. So there's a lot of familiar faces as you'll go through, including one from Iron Fist.
Sasha
Milan. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely worth seeing. It's a little, it gets serious. It's not a.
It is a drama.
Yeah. It shows the lives of the people involved, warts and all. And I think that's kind of cool. It's a credit to them all.
Yeah.
But excellent. Yeah. Definitely.
And I believe that actually is a bonus feature if you buy it on iTunes.
Yes. It comes with, if you buy the Day of the Doctor series. Excellent.
I think I think we've pretty much exhausted everything. I think that's everything.
There's nowhere to go from here but up.
That's right. So yeah, we've covered everything. So all right. So then that is Matt Smith's time in the TARDIS. We've covered it all. So we are with the regeneration. We will then be regenerating the show. We will be coming back to talk about the next Doctor, Peter Capaldi, in our next episode, and also we will be continuing to talk about the brand new episodes as they air too. So we will be, and it looks like we're going to be coming. I think the two will converge near towards the end.
Yes, they will. I'm still unpacking.
Exactly. It is quite the shift. So we'll talk about that in its own episode. So all right. Yes. Thank you everybody for listening. We went a little longer than we usually do, but boy, like we warned you, there was plenty of stuff to talk about with these episodes. So we'll get back to our regular length in the next one. We'll do the first half of Peter Capaldi's first season in the next episode. So all right, we'll be good to go. So as always, thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Thank you for the alternate titles. I always enjoy them. Thank you to Engineer Alice for making us sound super professional. All the mistakes come from us. All the professionalism comes from her, I swear. And so you mentioned it early on, so I have a little audio. One last speech from Matt Smith to take us home. We'll see you next time.
Clara sometimes asks me if I dream. Of course I dream, I tell her. Everybody dreams. But what do you dream about, she'll ask. The same thing everybody dreams about, I tell her. I dream about where I'm going. She always laughs at that. But you're not going anywhere, you're just wandering about. That's not true. Not anymore. I have a new destination. My journey is the same as yours, the same as anyone's. It's taken me so many years, so many lifetimes, but at last I know where I'm going. Where I've always been going. Home. The long way round.